This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a part. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. It's Monday. It's 5 o'clock. So jazzed as hell to reintroduce to you one of our favorites, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And Harvey, I've been coming up with a new term. How about this one? Harvey K., a Delano Democrat. See, it's got the two D's, man. You with me?
Well, the problem with that is that was his mother's family name, if I'm not mistaken. And you might not realize that he had a father too, just for the record.
Come on, man. You're killing my buzz over here.
He was so excited coming in talking about double D's.
Double D's, man. I'm a Delano Democrat. We got to make it simple. Everyone knows Franklin. Well, maybe not everyone. People should know.
Tell you what. Yeah. Subscribe to my arguments and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right. I got it. I'll take it. I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show. Harvey, I know we're going to get to what we think the Dems need to do to win. And some of that, of course, is getting back to FDR's policies and supporting those and pushing those and articulating those, educating people on those. But before we get there, I want to get your reaction after we talked last week, of course, that United Health executive was murdered in New York. And, you know, a terrible tragedy, you know, kids lost a dad and wife lost a husband and families lost a relative and friends lost a friend. And that's never good. That said, the numbers that I saw that he was pushing through the insurance company of his division specifically, $261 billion in revenue last year. He himself made just over $10 million in base salary and, you know, other options and benefits. On top of that, he is also or was also involved in a fraud and insider trading case where he sold 11 days before news. It came public that they were under a DOJ investigation. He sold like over 30% of his personal stock in the company and reaped a $11 million profit in doing so. So he was looking himself at some very serious time for those accusations as well. So aside from the tragedy, and murder is always bad, we don't solve our problems that way. The reaction was really stunning to me. The gallows humor, the lack of empathy or sympathy for a healthcare executive. And I can kind of understand how many people have been rejected, denied care. I mean, that's kind of how they make their money, Harvey. What's your sense on how this portrays the American psyche right now?
Well, it actually portrays an American psyche that is divided powerfully, not by just questions of race and gender, which I think are actually secondary right now to questions of gross class inequalities.
Yeah.
I mean, if people come to see that as a question of, you know, this rich guy, very rich guy, super rich guy, okay, was involved as our other executives in the insurance industry. You know, it's not him alone, obviously. This is a whole class of folks. And making vast sums of money. I'm repeating myself over and over because I think that's the critical thing. And then many other people, first of all, can't get health insurance. Second of all, work two jobs and still can't get health insurance. Okay, I mean, their anger expresses itself in that kind of fashion. You know, right. I also heard somebody else say the kinds of expenditures of resources in tracking the killer compared to the other hundreds of murders that take place in cities each week, probably, yeah. Well, at least in New York City over the course of a year. It's astounding, you know, if let's put it this way, for the sake of everyone's family, I suppose, let's hope that you get that kind of attention if anyone ever takes you out. I mean, but I'm glad you opened up by saying, I mean, it is tragic. Okay. Yeah, there's no question. And a resort to singular assassinations is always a very perverse response, and one we should never, ever endorse, I think.
And I think it does shine, again, the reaction, not the action of the killer, who apparently there's somebody in custody right now, which is good. I mean, if you pay the price for the murder. It is the reaction that I think is very telling. And I'm wondering, are we able to capitalize on that? I mean, it's, to me, it just highlights, as I throw those statistics out, of the revenue and the profitability. Oh, I'm sorry. I think the division made 20 some billion dollars on the 200 some million dollars in gross revenue on top of the pay and all that. So these are gross, big numbers. And they're basically, to my humble opinion, taken on the back by denying claims. That's how you do. If you paid all the money out, you wouldn't make that kind of money. Do you think there's new room for conversation for a Medicare for all or something along those lines, Harvey?
Let's put it this way. I remember in 2020, the Democratic debate stage, and I don't remember exactly who challenged Bernie Sanders on this question, but one of the other candidates challenged Bernie regarding his push for Medicare for all, the closest we would ever, ever have been able to come to some kind of universal health care, by saying, do you want to bankrupt America? Well, people have got to understand the insurance companies are bankrupting plenty of people already. And if they're making that kind of money, right, then sure as hell we'd be better off reinvesting national resources in a national healthcare system where people are not rejected who have pressing needs. I mean, will it help? I don't know, but I can tell you this, that we will not finish the healthcare question now, because the question of what I think the Democrats need to do to win is very much involved in this question of national healthcare.
It certainly is. Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me for this and the next segment. Harvey, always a pleasure, man. All right, so what do the Dems need to do? I mean, obviously, let's start with this. Let's talk about the healthcare. How does this play into a Democratic victory going forward, Harvey?
Okay, that's more the punchline as opposed to the starter.
All right, well, okay. I'll let you lead it however you want, man. You tell me, brother.
Well, here's the thing. One of the subjects that has come up, not just from folks like me and by folks like me, but, you know, Bernie Sanders himself launched the big debate about what are the Democrats to do now that they're essentially leaderless. Okay, leaderless. And they're a total mess right now, the Democrats. Okay, well, the first thing the Democrats really need to do, whoever emerges, whether it's Ben Wickler here or Ken Martin out of Minnesota, the leadership of the Democrat, the new leadership, really must take up this question. Does the Democratic Party seek to be the party of working people or not? And if not, then we're in trouble. And if so, then first thing they need to do is they need to invite the labor unions, AFL-CIO as a representative of labor unions, back into the party. Now, did they ever throw them out? No, not exactly. But back in 68 to 70, 72, the Democratic Party reorganized the basis upon which candidates are chosen. I should say how candidates are chosen, national candidates. And what happened is they literally reduced the power and influence of labor in the process. This, and by the way, the ironic part is that this was a commission that was headed by George McGovern of South Dakota. And most people don't realize that move, by the way, they said this was in favor of basically small d democratizing the party more, better representation from women and minorities. That's how they put it at the time.
That was a justification at the time.
Right. Well, let's keep, interestingly enough, George Meany, the head of the AFL-CIO, walked out of the Democratic Party convention in 70, that would be 72, and took his entourage with him, in protest at the treatment of labor by that McGovern Commission and the Democratic Party itself. As a sidebar to this, nobody remembers this except those of us who had to do the research on it, is the fact that McGovern in 1966 was in the Senate, and the question came up of bringing an end to the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947, by which the Republicans, in many ways, sort of neutered, not totally, but really weakened the ability of the labor movement to organize in the South and elsewhere against, you know, the right to work policies. And so the question came before the Senate, and McGovern was there when the filibuster began. And when the vote was taken, what do they call it, a vote on cloture, the idea of ending the filibuster, he did not vote to end the filibuster. And Meany didn't forget that either. So here's the thing. Here we are, 52 years later. It's about time the Democratic Party figured out how not simply to engage working people in canvassing, not simply in securing dollars from the labor unions to support their candidates, but how to more directly involve the labor movement in talking about the platform, in selecting the candidates who they believe would be the right candidate to lead a party that claims to represent working people. So that's my first thing. I think that ought to be this new, or let me put it this way. If they don't do it, I think the labor movement headed by the FLCO, especially voices like Sean Fain, Sarah Nelson, and even, you know, Sean O'Brien, these people need to make more noise about literally engaging in the Democratic Party's deliberations about where the party's going.
In doing so, Harvey, we're kind of, you know, this is legacy, right? I mean, these things don't happen. You didn't fall off the coconut tree today, right? This is a legacy situation. And so to that point, then, wouldn't the corporate backers of the current Democratic Party maybe have some issue with that?
Undeniably. But let us be clear about this. The corporate backers, the billionaires and multi-millionaires, they have literally captured the Democratic Party. I mean, we saw this with the Harris campaign, when at the outset, apparently there was serious talk that they were going to do a kind of Bernie Sanders initiative of pointing a finger at billionaires and the big corporate bosses.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They were warned, the Harris campaign, to back off doing that. I mean, look, everybody knows the power of money inside of not only the Republican, but also the Democratic Party. And we've got to start getting the people back into it.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's our favorite Delano Democrat. And Harvey, everybody needs money. That's why they call it money. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. We will continue on our suggestions on how the Democrats can continue to win going forward. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
The Dom Salvi Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It is a phone line. It is a text line. We will get to all of your comments here shortly. Jess will clear your calls and get you on here with us. The news that, and thank you, Maggie Dawn, Overtime with Maggie Dawn. Make sure you check her out, 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, here on the Civic Media Radio Network, talking about this reported case here in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Josh Call, the AG here in Wisconsin, has leveled 10 additional charges against the three no-do-gooders here. We're talking about Kenneth Cheesebro. We're talking about Jim Troupas, a former Dane County judge, and Mike Roman. That was Trump's guy in town here.
Mm-hmm.
10 additional charges, meaning there are now 11 charges total, and I believe it said what? Let's see. Each of the charges 11 charges levied, carries a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison in addition to $10,000 fine. Now, that's a lot.
That's
right?
A lot.
That could be a lot. And Maggie was, of course, across the table from Troopas when she was defending the state of Wisconsin, specifically Milwaukee County, in these cases. And let's not forget what they were trying to do. I mean, let's accentuate the fact. They're trying to overthrow the election. You see, folks, Trump lost in 2020. I know he doesn't like to say that, and a lot of the sycophants around him have waffled on whether that is in fact the case. Yeah, it happened. Trump lost. We know that because Biden lost this election, and now he's no longer going to be the president. And Trump lost the last time. So what did they try to do? Well, they tried to overthrow and throw out your vote. My vote. Let's not talk about you. I don't know how you voted. I know how I voted. Mm-hmm. And I don't take it too kindly when these right-wing mega nut jobs try to concoct a scheme to work around the fact that your guy lost the election. Period. Full stop. Oh, they did it back in the 1800s. Oh, they did. No. Okay, they did some things, but they were different circumstances.
Imagine that.
They were different cases. They wanted to overturn the election. That is what this is about. When Donald Trump's not going to face any charges for his January 6th insurrection, but this was all part of the plan. Lots of plans, right? Lots of conspiracy. A lot of spokes in the wheel to get the plan through. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate that perhaps this might be some of the only few people who pay the price for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, this was presumably, I would say, coming from the top. They sold it to the big guy, and they're pushing it. And they had their opportunity. They had over 60 court cases. They had over 60. And yes, some maybe were thrown out for standing, though that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they did get some court cases, and they lost. And they lost, and even some of those that got thrown out, my understanding, were appointed by Trump.
Indeed.
So you can't go to the courts with nothing in your pocket and say, you know, give me redress. And they're going to say, for what? You got lost an election. So they had that whole legal angle going. And then they had this other angle. Well, we'll throw it back to the states, let the legislature decide. Oh, that's a great idea. Hey, who won? So in that process, in that endeavor, former Dane County judge engaged in fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And the fraud was in order to overthrow the election, to throw away my vote. And he should pay a price for that. And I'm sorry. Oh, it's not laughable to me. I can go to jail for 6 years. I have no doubt they'd love to do that. Make me a poster child. Yes. You try to throw out my vote? You should absolutely be a poster child. That'd be the best of it. Head on a spike? I don't think that we can do that anymore, but they used to do things like that. Little outdated. But some consequences for it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a novel idea these days. I mean, it's like it's happening.
It seems so old school now. Consequences. 855-752-4842. Toddler Billy, he chimes up. Yeah, poster child? It's called deterrence. Thank you, brother. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I don't want to lose sight. And I know we kind of, try to joke around, try to have fun. But these are serious charges. Because it's not just the fraud. People do all sorts of kinds of fraud. What was a fraud endeavoring to do? To wreck our democracy. To throw out Dominic's vote. If you don't care about anything else, care about my vote. Because I care about mine. And Jess too.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
Our vote.
Yeah.
Our collective vote. I want our votes to be counted.
They should be.
And I want them to be applied. And if our person loses, they lose. If our person wins, they win.
Mm-hmm.
And if they lose, we go back and try to do it again. If they win, we hold them accountable to their campaign promises.
Uh-huh.
This is how we do it. You don't engage in let's just call it, even on the legal side of it, a bunch of bunk and BS, as evidenced by they lost over 60 cases. And the one case, I believe it was in Pennsylvania, that they did actually win, had nothing to do with the actual vote count, had some sort of process or dates or whatever the case was. It didn't have an effect on the election. So you lost, and this whole big lie, and this is the consequence, the culmination of the conspiracy of the big lie, is Troopas coming to Wisconsin, and Cheesebro in the room with the fake electors. Hell, he got a video, if I recall correctly, of them doing the crime, quote unquote. And the additional charges, mind you, was for Troopis because he apparently, if you believe Troopis and these other guys, Roman and Cheesebro, lied to the 10 Republicans. And most of them, apparently, according to the reporting, did not want their signatures to be affixed unless it was a court ruling that that was the case. So he engaged in fraud on his own side. His own side. So I'd like to see you defend that. Are you going to, you know, you're going to, this thing goes to trial. You're going to call up Andrew Hitt, former head of the Republican Party here in the state of Wisconsin. You're going to testify. He's an attorney himself, man. He went out and got in front of this thing back in the day, right? He did like a 60 Minutes interview. Oh, we didn't know anything about it. Well, if you believe that, and it's kind of hard to, but if you take him at his word, and then you see now the attorney general here in the state of Wisconsin, Josh Call, following that up with an additional 10 charges. Quote, according to the complaint, most of the electors said they did not consent to having their signatures presented as if Trump had won the state without a court ruling saying so. And I do not consent for my vote to be thrown out by a bunch of crooked attorneys and political types who absolutely know better. And if you're going to play stupid games, you should win stupid prizes.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Your show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's our grown-up gift list text to win contest. So go download the Civic Media app, find our station, use the text button at the bottom of the screen and send the keyword Santa for your chance to win in this statewide contest. It's going to go on through the rest of this hour up until 5 o'clock. So make sure you do it. Text Santa. Got James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Wrapping up our discussion of Christopher Wray and the FBI, but we're not leaving the FBI quite yet. Jim, the reporting out today, as I see it at the Hill, the DOJ reporting that no undercover FBI agents were present for January 6th. Countering conspiracy theories. Wait, what?
Huh?
Quote, we have found no evidence in the materials we reviewed or the testimony we received showing or suggesting that the FBI had undercover employees in the various protest crowd or at the Capitol on January 6th. The Inspector General concluded in an 88-page report reviewing the Bureau's response. Now,
so we've got that.
We got right? that. Now this is the rest of it, though. This is what gets me. The report did find that some of the FBI's confidential human sources, referred to as CHSs, confidential human sources, they were present in the crowds, including three who were tasked with monitoring domestic terrorism subjects. Quote, none of these FBI CHSs were authorized to enter the Capitol or a restricted area or to otherwise break the law on January 6th, nor was any CHS directed by the FBI to encourage others to commit illegal acts on January 6th. Now, beyond the three sources who coordinated Jim with the Bureau, the Inspector General found that 23 other confidential human sources came to D.C. in connection with the rally, of which four entered the Capitol and another 13 entered the restricted security perimeter set up around the building. Quote, none of the CHSs who entered the Capitol or a restricted area has been prosecuted to date, the report concludes. Now, I'm glad that we had some people monitoring what was going on. That seems very logical if you bring thousands and thousands of people to the Capitol to go and ransack. Of course, it wasn't ransacked yet, but it got there, right? Mm-hmm. So I expect that. But do you make a distinction, Jim, or a big difference between confidential human sources or actual guys are on the payroll? I'm sorry, he's a 1099. He's not a W-2.
Right.
I mean, what?
It is the kind of thing that, again, the American population will not get into this story the way that we're talking about it right now, right? And you know that right now the other side of the media is already saying, see, the FBI had people. They were going inside and they weren't prosecuted. The headline will not make that distinction. There is a bit of a distinction between the two of them, and that is because you do have employees who are, again, subject to very strict rules and regulations. You also have these confidential sources who are, again, they're not on the payroll. That may be a distinction that may not make a whole lot of difference.
But it doesn't mean they're not getting paid.
Precisely, right? And they do, and they're getting paid also for some information that hopefully would have been helpful for the FBI. We'll talk more about its information base in just a minute or so. But helpful to the FBI in understanding what's going on, helpful to the FBI in knowing what is coming. And so that's a valuable thing. In the end, again, the distinction may be less significant for mom and pop out there in America. I think the important thing, there's this notion that they have not been charged. Well, there are many people, frankly, who entered the Capitol, entered security grounds that were not charged. Basically, the U.S. Attorney's Office, they're prosecuting people engaged in violence, did some things to destroy the trappings of the Capitol building, discretionary judgments made all the time. And my strong guess is, although we will not see this probably for years, is a lot of those CHSs were probably also providing information to the FBI in real time. Here's where I am. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm seeing right now. And as this thing got completely out of control, may have had some positive benefit on the response, although, again, it was catastrophic overall. And so it's a mixed bag, undeniably a mixed bag. The big issue is that you did not have a conspiracy. The big conspiracy issue, of course, is see, the FBI caused this. They had people on the ground who prompted all these legitimate, mom and pops from around America. They prompted to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. That's what the Inspector General found did not happen. That's not what those folks were doing on that day. They're providing information.
They weren't enticed into this activity by FBI employees to attack the Capitol.
Right. These were not the instigators. These were not members of the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters.
Were they Antifa?
Right. Oh, yeah. And there's the counter headline. They were not in that category of people who caused this in the first place, which is some of what those conspiracies say. This would not have happened but for the FBI. Not the case. And again, the Inspector General, it's inside the Department of Justice, admittedly, but it's a quasi-independent agency that reviews the operations of the department. This is kind of the watchdog. Every single cabinet office has this kind of thing. This is Michael
Horowitz. Who can fire the Inspector General and the FBI?
The answer is that the Attorney General can, the President can, but there's usually...
Can the FBI Director?
No.
Okay.
No. That would be, again, I'm thinking of the organizational chart here. The FBI director, the Inspector General does not respond to the FBI director. So the answer is no. But again, the subject, if you are engaged in wildly crazy investigations out there coming to conclusions that are completely unsupported, then you've got a problem there. But for the most part, again, like an FBI director, you want somebody there who's reasonably, not completely, but reasonably insulated from that kind of political retribution, if you will, if you do something that a president doesn't like.
James Santella, former U.S. attorney, joining me, Dom, on the Dom Salvia Show. Just PS on the board, 855-752-4842. Inspector General report coming out on the FBI's actions during the January 6th Love Fest?
It was a tourist event, yeah, apparently, according to some members of the Congress.
The Hill reporting, Jim, but the report found the Bureau fell short in contacting its offices across the country to see what their confidential sources were saying about the planned rally. Quote, while the FBI undertook significant efforts to identify domestic terrorism subjects who planned to travel to the Capital Region on January 6th, we also determined that the FBI did not take a step that could have helped the FBI and its law enforcement partners with their preparations in advance of January 6th specifically. The FBI did not canvass its field offices in advance of January 6th, 2021 to identify any intelligence, including confidential human sources reporting about potential threats to the January 6th electoral certification, the report found. In the statement responding to the report, the FBI defended its preparations. Quote, this is the FBI Inspector General. Right. That was their position. Here's what the FBI said. Although the FBI continues to disagree with certain of the factual assertions of in the report regarding the manner of specific steps and the scope of the canvas undertaken by the FBI in advance of January 6th, a time period during which the report recognizes as including multiple field offices providing information response to direction from Washington field office and FBI headquarters, the FBI nonetheless accepts the OIG's recommendation regarding potential process improvements for future events. I mean, come on. Okay, so they reached out to a couple, but not enough? I mean, is that what I'm hearing?
Mistake with capital M, capital I-S-T-A-K-E, right? You've got the deputy director, again, is underneath Christopher Reyes, I said before. What he says is, yes, it probably is understating the error here, but he says a basic step was missed. No kidding, right? Right? and again, something like this, again, I have to tell you, I was not sufficiently aware of the fact that this, I knew there was going to be a rally there on that day. There's some reporting. I didn't realize how organized this was in terms of social media out there, but that's what the FBI is supposed to do. And how do you get that information from Wyoming and California and Wisconsin and Florida and Georgia and every other place? You reach out to your field offices. There's a special agent in charge of every one of those field offices out there. And you say, what are you hearing in Minneapolis, in Phoenix, in St. Louis, in St. Petersburg? Tell us what you're hearing right now, right?
Jim, can't you just look at the crowd, man? I mean, they come, we'll be wild. I mean, the Donald Trump tweeted it out, right? I mean, the internet activity was buzzing. I mean, everyone was coming. He knew there was a bunch of people showing up. They had magnometers or, you know, machines that Trump was saying, let the people in, let them come in, right? They prepped enough for that. They pulled permits, right, for the rallies. I mean, of course they knew they were coming.
Absolutely. And so that's, I presume that may or may not be a part of exactly what the FBI is pushing back on. This more fundamental mistake is, okay, who are the people who are going to be showing up here or accepting that invitation? What do you know about what's coming in from Colorado? What is your group out there? What from Wisconsin? Have you seen some chatter on the deep web, on the overt web here, that tells you who these people are and what they're all about? Are they talking about violence? Are they misled? Are they, what do they look like? And that's the kind of intelligence that can also help you design what the nature of your response is and really give you a sense of how dramatically bad or not so bad this is going to be, regardless of what that should have shown, what would have shown FBI, again, as I said before, acknowledging we did this inadequately. We should have reached out and learned more about the people who are there on the ellipse and then invited by the president down the street to attack the Capitol. We should have done better.
Should have done better. It blows my mind, Jim. And it's so outrageous. It's hard for me not to think that they were just sitting on their hands like they had instruction not to, or somebody did. How do you not send the cavalry, Jim, the FBI, the whoever, someone get a gun, the Capitol's getting attacked? Where was the cavalry, Jim, from the FBI or anybody else?
Absolutely. And so this is the kind of thing, again, you look to Congress. This is the kind of thing that a congressional committee, an oversight committee, getting this report, again, depending, we know the time is short. It's 38 days, right? But in a properly divided government, you would have oversight committees in the House and the Senate who would grab this report and say, you know what? In 3 weeks, we're having an oversight hearing, and we're calling in these people who are identified in this report. We're calling in Christopher Wray for as long as he's there, the deputy director, the person in charge of this operation, and we're going to read the riot act to them, but also question them about why is it that you did not do this, and ask for some responses. And it may be interesting to find out, again, the inspector general tells us this was not done. The real question is, why not? Where was this dropped, right?
Yeah.
And that's something, that's the real story here. Was this, again, now I'm going to be engaged in some of the conspiratorial stuff. Were there some instructions from internally, externally? We don't know
well,
that.
Well, there were instructions specifically from the Pentagon, I think. About the National Guard and how and they were supposed to engage with the Trump supporters.
Exactly. And standing down from that, yes. We know all about that.
So we know what happened at least on the National Guard, at least in that regard. Now, Christopher Miller, I believe his name was.
Right. And so we've got that. The question should be asked in the wake of this in a government that would follow up on this question when a Congress, again, presumably is going to be Republicans in both houses. Are they going to have that oversight? They're going to seize on this report under a Donald Trump administration that may, in fact, reveal something about the bad things that went on in the last weeks of that administration? No, the answer is not. And so we have to wait now for other investigative journalists to pursue this further, to ask those questions. That's the only other aspect out there that it reveals more about this. It is a very frustrating situation.
Sorry, folks, our bad. We should have done better. Next. I mean, that, if there's not, I don't know. And we can do
accountability.
Yeah, yep. Right. What does that look like here?
Right.
And it's not just on again, it blows my mind that you would see it. If it was Black Lives Matter, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They never would have got foot. I mean, that's my humble personal opinion in what I believe is a very problematic racial issue we got in this country. Right. I mean, when Black Lives Matter went there, my understanding, they put Trump down in the bunker, man.
Right.
And it got out. He was not happy about that.
Right. And here's the other piece that you just implicitly suggested. You would anticipate, again, very soon, that the FBI internally would also do more to come out in the wake of this report and say, here's what we have done to REM. Here, frankly, are the people who are responsible. Yeah. We're going to make sure this doesn't happen again.
What are you doing to make sure this doesn't happen again? At least the part that's in your purview. What are you doing? What actions are you taking to correct what happened? And if you don't, if it's not addressed, how do we know that's not going to happen again?
And if Christopher Wray does it, will Cash Patel do it in 40 days from now?
855-752-4842. More conversation regarding the J6. We got the fraudulent electors here in the state of Wisconsin. I want to talk to Jim about that as well. Come back with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Last segment of the day, Matt Rothschild, Jess P.S. on the board. 81% of Americans last year said they were dissatisfied with the cost of healthcare in the U.S., a 16-year high. Gallup polling has found, I think that means 19% have their healthcare paid for by somebody else. Tom from Madison, you will have the last word on the healthcare. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, thanks. Yeah, as an independent contractor, artist, musician kind of guy, 100% of my health care from pretty much my whole adult life. And I know there's going to be rationing and there's going to be distribution of resources and whatnot. But when you're making $10-20 billion at the end of it, that's crazy. And when it comes to guns, you know, somebody put it on best on the internet. I saw yesterday. Now CEOs have to be in the same class of threat as the typical grade school teacher or third grade.
Oh, God. Tom, thank you for that. That's terrible. I mean, what a situation we have here in this country. Thanks for listening, Tom. Always appreciate it. 855-752-4842. Matt, the poet, Nikki Giovanni, died at the age of 81. And I saw the headlines all over when it went down. And I got to be honest, man, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And you had sent a link from her interviewing James Baldwin from back in the day. And Baldwin's one of my favorites. And so I it was the first time I really saw that, and I was struck, man. What a powerful voice.
Yeah, you'd love this woman. I grabbed a book off my shelf, Selected Poems of Nikki Giovanni.
You may not know, I'm a, it's one of my passions, poetry. So I knew her work. I'd seen her speech. She came to Madison a couple times, most recently in 2017. Just an incredible voice of poetry and of freedom, of civil rights, of justice, a real fighter for justice.
Yeah.
And an icon of the civil rights movement. She knew Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, wrote an incredible poem when King died, saying, you know, his tombstone says, you know, free at last, free at last. But that's for slaves. We need to live in a country where he could have, you know, preached nonviolence his whole life. Yeah. So, yeah, an amazing person. We have a couple, I think we have a couple audio clips, Jess. Why don't you play the first one and then maybe go to James Baldwin.
All right. So this is a short poem, Am She.
I am she, making rainbows in coffee cups, watching fish jump after midnight in my dreams. On the stove, left front burner is the stew already chewed, certain to burn as I dream of waves of nothingness. Floating to shore, riding a low moon on a slow cloud, I am she who writes the poems.
Mm, I love that powerful voice. And then she was, you mentioned James Baldwin, Dom, one of the absolute greatest writers of the 20th century and a pioneer in the civil rights movement too. This was a conversation that Nikki Giovanni had with James Baldwin in 1971. Giovanni was 28. Baldwin was 47. They have kind of a class of generations, clash of generations here, but they have tremendous mutual admiration too. So let's play this little cut that I grabbed today for you, Jess.
So the question, I mean, for me, the question has always been power.
Yes.
And for, like you all, the question has been morals. You know, I never wanted to be the most moral person in the world.
I agree, I know.
I would like, I mean, I would sell my soul, you know what I mean? What does it profit a man to gain the world and lose his soul? Mm-hmm. The world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The world, that's what it profits.
I know.
So you take the soul, you know. At least the thing that's spiritual. Take the world, but give me Jesus.
Yes.
Y'all can have Jesus.
Yes.
Give me the world. You know, even though it's losing 25% of its energy every 100 years or something ridiculous.
Oh, please, don't believe all, don't believe everything you hear.
No, but I'm saying that's not my concern, you know?
I know.
Even though it's polluted, ugly, dirty, give it to me.
Oh, I just love that. Give it to me. Give me the world. Mm-hmm. You can have your morals. I want my power. I want the world. I want to end the injustice. And I looked at through this book and found a poem called A Very Simple Wish. I just want to read the last two stanzas, which are incredible. I want to make a quilt of all the patches and find one long, strong pole to lift it up, to lift it up. I have a mind to build a new world. Want to play? Love that. Just love that. Want to play? She was ready to play. Mm-hmm. She wanted to build that new world and where everyone's voice could be heard and not just, you know, say as Baldwin did tremendously that, you know, white people never be free as long as black people aren't free. But she wanted the power to make everybody free and to liberate her people. And such a tremendous voice. Nikki Giovanni at 81 died just 2 days ago, November 9th. And I think for people who ever saw her speak in Madison or elsewhere know what a tremendous voice she had. And if you haven't heard her speak, I would just recommend Google tonight, Nikki Giovanni, that's G-I-O-V-A-N-N-I, Nikki with two Ks, Nikki Giovanni and James Baldwin. And you'll get this.
I'll also link this into the show notes.
Oh, thanks. It's just an incredible conversation. It goes on for about 48 minutes. We just grabbed that 30 seconds, but it is, you will feel two of the wisest people you'll ever want to meet speaking about really important issues. And it's just fun to be a fly on that wall.
Mm-hmm. According to the New York Times, in her early years, much of her poetry was boldly militant as she addressed the horrors that had galvanized the civil rights movement, the murders of Emmett Till, the four black girls in Birmingham church bombing, and the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Quote, no one was much interested in a black girl writing what was called militant poetry, she wrote in her book, Gemini. So I formed a company and published myself.
There you go.
81 years old. Big shoes to fill. Look forward to getting to know her a little bit more in her writings. Thank you, Matt Rothschild, for coming out and hanging out with me today. Thank you, Jess P.S., for all of your work. Thank you to our fair audience for joining us. Stick around. Pete Schwab for the Nightlight is coming up next. And tomorrow, I got James Santel, former U.S. attorney, going to co-host with me in the Dom and Friends version of a Thursday. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Jess. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful night. We'll see you here tomorrow. What's your life and that's all thing I like what I see.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.